morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 31 degrees under sunny skies. Today is Friday, March 28, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. There was no fishing yesterday in the Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery as processors worked through Wednesday's catch, but fishing is likely today, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The department estimates that the commercial fleet caught about 37 tons of herring during Wednesday's opening. That brings the total caught so far to about 13,500 tons. Fish and Game biologist Dave Gordon predicted the fleet would need just one more opening to reach this year's harvest limit of over 16,000 tons. Gordon said an aerial survey yesterday morning found about 0.6 nautical miles of herring spawn along Middle Island in Sitka Sound, the same place it's been seen all week. That's only a slight expansion from earlier sightings. Fish and Game will issue another update today at 11 a.m. on VHF Channel 10. Thursday morning's live test of the state's tsunami warning system went pretty well, except many people didn't realize it was a test. Most of us are accustomed to hearing the words, "This is a test," with the routine monthly broadcasts. This message, however, was triggered using so-called live codes. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Jeremy Zydek is the public information officer with the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management.
The live code has a little bit different message that is broadcasted over televisions and on the radio, and it really enables us to see the reach and the effectiveness of those live codes before there's an event that happens.
The test, at least as heard over coastal public radio stations, gave a rundown of warning areas. It was eerily similar to what we heard following the earthquake in January 2013, because it was that message, more or less. According to Joel Curtis with the National Weather Service, the message that was broadcast was an actual warning template, which overwrote the warning message composed for the live test. In short, it was a software error. And errors, says Jeremy Zydek, are what the tests are designed to discover.
Every year when we test the live codes, we do find some anomalies, some places where we need to improve the system, but that's the purpose of the test.
The live test was targeted at coastal communities, and that part of the test worked, except for receiving the same alarming test message. In Sitka, the test was followed up by a call burst from the Code Red system in the police department, reassuring residents that the tsunami warning message was just a test. The annual live test has taken place for the last several years on the anniversary of the 1964 Alaska Good Friday earthquake, which killed 131 people, 116 of them in the subsequent tsunami. For the 50th anniversary of the quake this year, public safety officials conducted a day-long preparedness event called Alaska Shield. 14 communities participated, along with the Alaska National Guard, active military personnel, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and numerous state agencies. The live tsunami warning test was the kickoff for a pretty big day.
The exercise is really focused around a similar event, like the 1964 event, a 9.2 earthquake, and the impacts that that type of event would have in today's built environment.
So the fact that the live test message got our attention may have actually been a good thing, said meteorologist Joel Curtis. At least the message, however poorly it was constructed, was heard by an awful lot of people along the coast, and we're pretty happy about that. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau still relies on ad placements to attract visitors to the community, but it's also receiving more and more referrals through social media. SCVB Director Tonya Ryu told the Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday that Facebook was now her number three source for inquiries about the community. There are over 13,000 people following and sharing the SCVB's posts on Facebook, roughly double the number at the beginning of 2013. In her presentation, Ryu emphasized that relationships, in whatever form, were an important tool for marketing a destination like Sitka. Hosting the Alaska Travel Industry Association convention last October sent a message that Sitka is capable of more than what many in the industry expected, and that the connections people made within the community can be converted into advertising value. Here's a brief excerpt of her remarks on the power of word of mouth.
We're a destination marketing organization. They expect us to say, Sitka's amazing. You should come here. That's our job, right? But when other people are recommending Sitka, when other people come here and see what a special place this is and have amazing experiences and they tell other people about it, that's where the value really lies. And so this year the CVB is going to be focusing on, number one, communications outside of Sitka and sparking interest. So a more focused and deliberate communication stream with media, travel writers, and again, because travel writers have the ability to spark interest in a different kind of way than we can. When there's a feature article in a magazine about Sitka, that is a recommendation from a writer who came here, and that's really their opinion and what they think about it. So that's extremely valuable. And the conversion rate, if you have a two-page feature publication on your destination in a major magazine, that could equate to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 of advertising if you were to purchase that as an ad. So it is a really good bang for our buck.
Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau Director Tonya Ryu speaking to the Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. And tourists coming to Southeast Alaska and going charter fishing this year could get more than the usual one halibut per day, but it will take charter businesses and commercial quota shareholders working together in a new program. Angela Denning has more from Petersburg.
Southeast charter anglers used to be able to keep two halibut per day of any size, but in recent years, there have been increasing restrictions with more bag limits and size limits. The restrictions have been developed because the charter sector has continued to overfish their harvest level. But Pete Troy, who owns Petersburg Fishing Adventures, says he's lost business because of it.
Incredible amounts of business I lose because of that. I have lots of interested people, and when I tell them what they're going to be able to keep for fish, they say, no, we'll pass.
This year, a new program could give charter businesses like Troy's a little more leeway. It's called GAF and stands for Guided Angler Fish. It's a voluntary provision of the new halibut catch sharing plan and allows halibut charters to lease commercial quota for more harvest opportunity. There is no size limit on the GAF fish.
And so using GAF, charter anglers could potentially keep up to two fish of any size per day.
Julie Scheuer is a fishery management specialist with the National Marine Fisheries Service in Juneau. NIMFS is overseeing the GAF program.
Under this new catch sharing plan, what the guided angler fish provision allows is for quota shareholders to lease a limited amount of their IFQ to a charter halibut permit holder to be harvested in the charter fishery.
Charter guides can use GAF in different ways. They could use their charter limit of one fish, which has size restrictions, and then use one GAF for a fish of any size. Another option would be to use two GAFs for two fish of any size. The idea for the transfer program came from the Charter Halibut Stakeholder Committee. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council approved the program.
It's a razzle-dazzle deal they came up with.
Charter Captain Pete Troy says it was very hard to understand at first, but now he says he gets it.
It means that when I get a customer on the boat that catches a fish, he's able to pay an extra $150 approximately and keep that fish, allowing him to keep two fish a day instead of just one little ping-pong paddle.
Troy would like to give GAF a try, but he hasn't found commercial fishermen who would sell their quota share for a reasonable price. And it will be up to fishermen like Troy to make the transfer deals. Scheuer says NIMFS won't get involved in pricing what quota shares are worth. She says it could go through brokers like other IFQ sales, or fishermen could do it on their own.
Information is available from NIMFS about who holds IFQ, and so an interested charter halibut permit holder could get that list from us if they wanted to contact some of these people. I don't know. I imagine maybe they'll advertise in a local newspaper or Craigslist or something like that as well.
Perhaps the easiest scenario is fishermen who have both, charter permits and quota shares. There are 19 of those fishermen in Southeast's Area 2C.
They can just transfer some of their own quota to themselves if they're operating in both fisheries.
Interest in the new program is still unknown, but Heath Hilliard bets it's not going to be very popular. He is the executive director of Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, or SEAGO.
I've still only heard of about, I don't know, less than 20% of Southeast operators who have any plan or intention or desire to lease into the guided anglerfish provision.
While Hilliard understands the need for restrictions, he doesn't think this is the answer.
We've said the whole time that while we appreciate the council's intent to provide a compensated reallocation mechanism, we don't think this is really the best approach.
He says some fishermen might use GAF this year, but not next year when the program will change the conversion formula or what the amount is for the individual fishing quota to one GAF fish. Currently, it uses about 26 pounds for one fish, but next year they'll use an average from GAF fish caught just this season. And Hilliard says that will raise the cost to fishermen.
So rather than just assuming 25 pounds or less, it's going to be, well, we know the average fish size for the guided angler fish from 2014 was 40 pounds. And so all of a sudden, the respective cost is going to go up dramatically in 2015.
GAF catches will count towards the commercial catch limit and not the charters. The charter limit this year is about 761,000 pounds, down about 17,000 from last year. There are additional reporting requirements for charter guides using GAF. They'll have to submit an electronic report to NIMFS through their website. And while the new transfer system is voluntary, it's also permanent in nature. GAF will remain in federal regulations until it's changed through the regulatory process. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. You can also link to Facebook and have the news tweeted. It's just about 8:01. This is KCAW Sitka. We're going to rejoin NPR's Morning Edition. Then it's a local interview at 8:18.